Today's gospel is a short one, just a few verses. It's a simple story. Jesus observes the people putting money into the treasury, the collection box, and the central focus is on the poor widow who puts in only two small coins, but Jesus honors her for putting in more than all the rest. So it's a simple idea, except it's not that simple, because what we have set before us is an example of totality. It's an inspiring example, but it's also a very intimidating one, challenging. How can we live with such abandonment? Actually, not only today's gospel, but also today's first reading, which is about the four Jewish exiles who are placed into the court of King Nebuchadnezzar. We have another example of totality or abandonment to God. And then when we look at the martyrs of today's feast, the 117 Vietnamese martyrs, we see again examples of this kind of total offering of oneself to God. This is very fitting to reflect on in light of yesterday's great feast, the solemnity of our Lord Jesus Christ, King of the universe. When we focus on Jesus Christ, of course, we're also reflecting on totality, the universe. Jesus is Lord of Lords and King of Kings. He reigns over everything. There is no exception. He has total power, absolute power. And so we celebrated yesterday. If we were able to recognize that that absolute power is not a threat to us, or a disadvantage to us, because that's the reaction of human nature and of many people in the world. It's not a good thing for anybody to have power over us. But when it comes to Jesus Christ, it is a good thing. It's a very good thing because his power is entirely dedicated to love, or is entirely expressed as an expression of his love. So it's not just absolute power, it's absolute love that we celebrate when we celebrate Christ the King. As I was doing research for yesterday's feast, I ran across something I don't remember hearing before. Some Protestant communities observe the last 4 weeks before Advent as a season they call Kingdom Tide. Never heard of it. I don't remember ever hearing of it, Kingdom Tide. So it's a season to reflect on the kingdom and on the king. I'm not sure exactly what they mean by it, but it sounds like something Father Francis would come up with, because he loved to ponder the liturgy and its movements, its developments, its growth over the period of the year. So maybe he would have loved to hear about Kingdom Tide. In any case, we have been focusing in the last few weeks, really the whole month of November, on the coming of the Lord's kingdom and what happens after we die and after the end of time. We have been reflecting on that, and we will continue to reflect on that through this week and actually right into Advent. If you know, the beginning of Advent is also about the second coming of Jesus Christ, the King. So this is a kind of kingdom tide, and especially this week, it's not officially an octave, but it is a week, the last week of the year, and we reflect on the last things. So in light of this idea that we are citizens of a kingdom and actually we are participants in the kingdom of someone who reigns over everything, then we can reflect on these readings with a little bit better perspective. Because this poor widow, who doesn't have much in the first place, gives it all away. And that strikes us as being a very reckless or foolish or dangerous way of living. Well, now what? Is this woman being foolish? Or is she practicing what we sometimes also hear about in modern times? Is she just giving up? Saying, it doesn't matter anyway, I'm going to die anyway, so it doesn't matter what I do. No, she's not doing that. She's not giving up. She's not abandoning herself to nothingness or to hopelessness. She's dedicating herself to God. The offering she makes to the temple treasury is an offering of herself to God. And that is not foolishness, that's deep wisdom. In fact, it's great faith. The faith of a total offering of oneself to God. We see evidence of this kind of gift of self whenever we see or hear about someone making a consecration. Actually, it's true in marriage as well. When people marry, they make a gift of themselves. It's a very risky thing to do. It even seems foolish in modern times. Or when we hear about a young man or young women consecrating themselves to religious life or to the priesthood. Very beautiful, inspiring dedication of oneself, but to the eyes of the world, it looks foolish. It looks like they're throwing their life away or wasting their life. No, they're not doing that. They're giving themselves to God. So this kind of total offering, we have to see in a positive sense, and we can only do that if we see it in light of who the woman is giving herself to, or who people consecrate themselves to, or who we belong to as subjects of a great king. It's not throwing ourselves into nothingness or hopelessness or emptiness or a reckless abandon. It's gift, it's offering, it's love. This woman, we don't know anything else about her other than that she's absolutely destitute and that she gives everything she has to the treasury. We don't know if she has relatives, if she has responsibilities, we don't know how old she is, we don't know anything. But we do know that Jesus pointed her out and said she put in more than all the rest. She made a greater gift of herself, even though she gave much less money, because she gave her whole self. So that's an example set before us to ponder, kind of a challenge to us. We like to make a gift. We like to make gifts, we like to be givers, but our whole self, nothing left for me. This is one of the challenges of faith, right? When we're following God and He's blessing us, we feel great about that. It's very easy when we feel blessed. We're happy. We're not too stressed. We can handle the circumstances of our life or of the day. But once we get overloaded, once God seems to be pressing for more than we can give, or He allows us to experience deprivation or sickness or some kind of contradictions, then our faith is put to the test. And we have to ask ourselves, do I still trust in God even when He's not doing what I want, even though He's not satisfying my own desires? That's faith. And faith grows when it's put to the test like that. So let's see how these young men in the first reading respond to the test. They are exiles. They're in Babylon. They've been forcibly removed from their home country, and they're in this pagan land. And they're picked out to be part of the household of the king, to be participants in the reign of the pagan king. Okay, that seems like an advantage. If you're going to be an exile, you might as well be in the good graces of the king rather than be his enemy. So they're brought into the king's service, and they're supposed to eat what the king eats, eat the portion from the king's table, which is unclean food. So Daniel, and it seems that all of them, but Daniel's the spokesman, Daniel says, well, I'm not going to eat unclean food. And so he asks for permission to have other food. It doesn't work with the chief chamberlain, because the chief chamberlain is more afraid of the king than of God. He probably is a pagan anyway. But Daniel presses the case, and he works out a deal not with the chief chamberlain, but with the steward, a lower servant, who's the one who actually brings the food. And he says, well, we don't want this unclean food. Just give us vegetables and water. The steward agrees to test it out for 10 days. That was the deal, test it out for 10 days. It worked. So it worked that Daniel and his companions were healthier and looked better fed than the others. So the test was, will you eat unclean food or not? Daniel says, no, I won't. And they get blessed they're healthy. What if it didn't work? What if after 10 days they looked weaker and more sickly? And the steward said, I'm not going to do this anymore, it's not working. Then that would have been another test for Daniel and the young men. Now, it didn't happen in this case. In fact, in this case, God blessed these young men with great wisdom and insight and even understanding of dreams, interpretation of dreams and visions. So God is blessing them in this early stage of their service of the king. We know that it won't be easy forever, because eventually, you know, we get thrown in fire and all these other hardships. But they pass the initial test and God blesses them. But they're still young and they still have a long way to go. Which brings up, so I'm saying the poor widow is a more stirring example, because we don't see her getting blessed for her sacrifice. We see her living her faith without any recompense. Whereas these young men, after 10 days, they're doing pretty well. But then we turn to the example of the Vietnamese martyrs, 117 canonized people, mostly from Vietnam, although some foreigners as well, mostly lay people, although some clergy as well. People who, because they were dedicated to Jesus Christ, lost everything. At first, of course, they were imprisoned or threatened or beaten, but eventually they were forced to undergo brutal tortures and death. Some were killed by the sword, some were burned to death, some were starved to death, some were beaten to death, some were had their heads cut off. I mean, all kinds of really terrible treatment. And we say, well, what is it? How do ordinary people persevere in their dedication to Jesus Christ at this cost, at this absolute cost? And the only answer is this total dedication, total gift of oneself to God. Martyrs don't persevere because they're tough, or because they're strong, or because they have more human gifts. They persevere because they rely on God. They rely on the Holy Spirit. They recognize who the real king is. Not King Nebuchadnezzar, not the king of Vietnam, or whatever the high authority over those people was. No, the king is Jesus Christ. And he's a good king. He's a powerful king. He's a merciful king. He's a loving king. So no matter what happens, good or bad, our real security is in Jesus Christ. So reflecting on this poor widow who didn't know, actually she didn't know Jesus. She knew God. These four young men who didn't know Jesus, this is Old Testament, and especially these Vietnamese martyrs, reflecting on them, we see what's set before us. Total dedication to God. Without anxiety, without fear, without second guessing, without doubts, total dedication to God. It doesn't mean we know what to do practically every moment, but we know the principle is God is the absolute authority over us, and he's a good authority. So we can trust him. We put our trust in him, we give ourselves to him, we trust that he will provide for us whatever we need today and forever. And that's what gives us security, peace, joy. We can rejoice even in times of difficulty and suffering because of what a great king we serve.